And I hear everybody say that things are different today. Was it in the lifetime? Or was it only yesterday? I saw you standing in the rain. And nothing's been the same since you came around. You came around, round, round, yeah.
I've been walking on the sun. I just closed my eyes.
Hello and welcome back to the Tools of Ignorance podcast. I am Jonah Birnbaum, and joining me from the United States of America, as always, is Hudson Belinsky. And Hudson, this is episode number 10. We have finally reached the illustrious double digits. How do you feel about that?
It hasn't hit me yet. I'm kind of in shock a little bit that, you know, we made it this far. It's a long, long way to go.
It's a long road, but, you know, it's kind of like the Blue Jays offseason frenzy. Like, it hasn't hit me yet, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like the two situations are analogous.
Mm-hmm. I mean, once you get to 10 episodes, you know, expectations are raised. So
I'm so not prepared for that. Like, if people expect us to actually perform at a high level on a consistent basis, like, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and we'll have to plan our shows more than 5 minutes ahead of recording.
Yeah, get real.
Yeah, it's going to be a long road.
We have to start wearing ties while we record or something like that?
Yeah, well, maybe. By the way, I am rocking a Lehigh Valley Iron Pig sweatshirt. That's what I'm rocking. What are you rocking?
I'm wearing a button-down from last night that I still haven't taken off, and I'm not sure if I'm at liberty to disclose that I'm wearing below the belt, so we'll leave it at that.
Okay, yeah. I guess we can move on from that.
That's a smooth segue.
Yeah, smooth segue. So, Jonah, I guess we can talk about this little game of baseball if you're up for it.
Absolutely. And on today's show, we will be breaking down a number of transactions for you, including the signings of Francisco Liriano with the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Cubs signing a couple of pitchers, and the trade between the Seattle Mariners, Seattle Mariners and Los Angeles Angels, sending Jason Vargas in exchange for Kendry Morales, as well as a special guest appearance. That's what we got for you today.
Francisco Liriano is a wealthy man, 2 years and $14 million. That's what's on his plate this morning. Or it's afternoon, but Liriano getting paid. What are your thoughts on that contract?
Well, I was just shocked that he got multiple years. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at what he's done over the past two seasons, and it has not been good. He's had an ERA north of 5 for the past two seasons. People thought that when he came to the White Sox, maybe he'd be able to figure it out. At least that was their hope when they traded for him. That did not materialize. And I mean, it's quite obvious that a lot of that can be attributed to the astronomical walk rate. He's been walking more than 5 for 9 over the past two seasons. And I mean, even last year, because he's always been a guy who's been, you know, renowned for his great slider, and he has a very good fastball slider combo. But I mean, the strikeout rate was down last year, and it was down in 2011 and came back in 2012. But, I mean, the walk rate has remained quite high. Uh-huh. You know, over the past two seasons, he's only been worth a combined 2.9 wins above replacement. And, $7 million a year for a guy who's really, really struggled and really hasn't been performing even as well as a number 5 starter, to me, is somewhat perplexing. What were your thoughts?
I'm also confused about the 2 years thing because basically, by giving him 2 years, it makes somewhat of a statement that you think he's going to be one of your top 5 starters for the next 2 years. And so, you know, there's kind of this assumption that he's going to stick in the rotation, even when you're bringing up Gerrit Cole and Jameson Taillon in the next, probably in 2013. I would expect to see both of those names on the roster at some point this season. So it's kind of odd in that sense, but it also, I think Liriano is going to be a guy who finds a place to play for a long time. He's still relatively young. The stuff was really good. He's had a really, really good couple of goes at this thing. When he first came up as a youngster, he was just brilliant. And then, you know, coming back from Tommy John, it was a difficult road, but he had gotten there. You look at 2010, a tremendous year, 191 innings, 201 strikeouts against 58 walks. And you look at now, the walk rate is kind of bloated, but I think teams are going to think that that's something they can fix. And so I think he's going to continue to be able to cash in. I just wonder how long that leash is. Is that leash longer than the next 2 years? If he doesn't correct his issues over the next 2 years, is he going to be expected to correct them at all?
Well, I mean, you saw last year that he actually did spend some time working out of the bullpen. So, I mean, the Pirates kind of have that luxury because they have two phenomenal pitching prospects sort of waiting in the wings that they can call up when they feel they're ready. And, you know, should Liriano struggle, they at least have the option to relegate him to the bullpen. And, I mean, it wasn't even just the walks last year. I mean, the home run rate was up. It was the highest that's been since 2009. And, I mean, really nothing went well for Liriano last year. I mean, you know, an ERA of 5.34, and the ground ball rate was down below his career marks. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be totally surprised if they just opted to move him to the bullpen once one of those two arms was ready.
Yeah, and there's also this idea that moving to the National League will help him tremendously, as it did E.G. Burnett just a year ago. They brought him in, and, you know, it kind of was perfect for A.J. Burnett. You know, you look at what he did with the Yankees in 2011. Burnett, 190 innings pitched, 173 strikeouts, 83 walks. And then the big thing was the 31 home runs. It's not too fun. But cutting down the home run rate, cutting down the walk rate just a little bit, and in the National League, you know, it makes a huge, huge difference. And so I guess you can kind of hope for that type of turnaround, where maybe it doesn't help exponentially, but it helps just enough to make him a really, really good number three starter. And then I can kind of see why this makes sense. But still, a two-year commitment to a guy who maybe is going to get a little bit better, it seems like a very tough risk to take.
Yeah, is it something that perhaps the Pirates did out of necessity in an attempt to, you know, attract one of the, I don't even want to say big name free agents, because in terms of talent, it's certainly not there. Well, I mean, performance hasn't been there, but I mean, just in terms of, you know, he's a name. People know who Francisco Liriano is. So is it perhaps something that they sort of were forced to do just to bring him over there?
I don't know. I don't know. I think that you could have gotten away with a rotation. You know, they could have tendered a contract to Jeff Karstens. Jeff Karstens can be the type of pitcher for less money and a smaller commitment that I think they're hoping Liriano will be. And you can go year to year with Karstens, him being still arbitration eligible. So that seems kind of odd to me to not tender a contract to Karstens, who's likely to make less than $7 million in a given season, but then to go out and give that money to Liriano, they must see something. There must be some effect, something behind the fact that he's this bigger name, and so your point kind of makes sense there, I guess.
And perhaps it's just sort of he's a stopgap until those arms are ready, just to sort of keep them sniffing contention, because, I mean, they only missed the second wild card spot by, you know, well, no, they missed it by quite a bit last year.
They fell out at the end.
First half, they were playing reasonably well.
Exactly.
And, you know, so perhaps he's that's what they're doing. They're trying to bring him over and just keep them sort of treading water until those high upside arms are available. And, you know, he'll just keep them alive, so to speak.
Yeah. And this is a team that keeps getting closer even to just winning game number 82 on the season. And maybe having Liriano does that for you. And I think winning number 82 is going to be almost as big as winning a playoff game. And looking at the history of the Pirates over the past couple decades, I believe it's true that the Pirates have not had a winning record in my lifetime, or yours, probably. But so, you know, I think getting to 82 wins is definitely something that has value to that franchise in that city.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I think that it's fair to say that we're both a little bit perplexed at the length of the deal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hopefully the Pirates are optimistic that they can extract some value out of a guy who's hasn't really been a serviceable starter over the past couple of seasons.
Mm-hmm. And so I think we can move on to another team in the same division that's not really all that good, but we've got the Chicago Cubs, who lost out on Anibal Sanchez last week. And then this week they have signed a couple of pitchers, the first whom being Edwin Jackson for 4 years and $52 million. Impressions of that signing first before we get to the other one they made?
Well, frankly, it's less money than I thought he would command. Of course, the destination is somewhat surprising considering the Cubs aren't in any position to vie for a playoff spot realistically in the immediate future. But I mean, I don't think that's ever deterred Edwin Jackson. He's been on, like, I think 79 teams in the past four seasons. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Edwin Jackson, he does have quite a bit of value because you know that for the most part he's going to go out there and throw, you know, between 180 and 200 innings every year. He'll make his 32 starts. And I mean, yeah, the command can be erratic, but at times he looks brilliant because he does have very good stuff. You know, for his career, he's been pretty much a 7-strikeout-per-9 guy. You know, last year he saw a spike in the home run rate that I imagine they hope will regress a little bit playing in the, you know, the division that they're in. But, you know, I mean, for the most part, he's been fairly valuable. I don't know that he necessarily can be the guy who does sort of what they've paid him to be. Because he'll probably slot in there as their number two starter, maybe three behind Samardzija. But, I mean, I don't know that he's that good. But, I mean, there's value in Edwin Jackson, and I think that they'll get it. But, you know, it's not going to put them over the edge. They're still a considerable ways from being a playoff team.
Yeah, they don't really have a lineup yet. So I don't see them competing for the first half of this contract, at least. I guess a 2015 run might be inside the realm of possibility, but I just look at a rotation. The rotation is kind of okay, but the lineup is kind of not okay. When you look at the main pieces being Anthony Rizzo and Starlin Castro, and then you can really look to upgrade any other spot on the field. So it's tough to imagine this deal working out in the short term, but I guess 2-3 years down the line, if they've got their minor leaguers coming up and ready to contribute, it could make sense for me. But then you're looking at why not just sign one of the pitchers 2 years from now and do it that way rather than take on this extra salary and pay somebody to make your team maybe a 75-win team versus a 72-win team or a 71-win team. It seems a little bit odd there. But I guess if you're talking about 2015-16, trying to go from 87 wins to 90, you know something like that, I guess it makes sense, but not a ton for me.
Well, that's probably why the Carlos Villanueva signing makes even less sense, to be honest. Because, why would they go out and add Carlos Villanueva for two seasons and pay him more money then you could have perhaps found another starter to be a part of their rotation when really competing in the next 2 years isn't a legitimate possibility. That one makes even less sense to me.
See, I wonder if they're looking at this potentially to get bailed out. And in a year from now, say they get one great year out of Carlos Villanueva, then, or let's just say he's a serviceable middle to back end starter for them. then it looks like you could probably flip him and what would be a 1 year and $5 million commitment for some pretty good value in terms of prospects. So I wonder if that maybe is their angle. Maybe they're a little bit better for the short term, and they can turn around and flip these guys for prospects in the next couple of years. I mean, Villanueva is much easier to flip with the smaller deal in terms of dollars. So he makes sense for that way of thinking. But Jackson, you know, $13 million a year isn't exactly a desirable contract for somebody to, you know, give up top prospects for. So it's kind of meh. I don't really know what the plan is. I think the Cubs are kind of doing this as they go. There's money there, and so why not spend it, maybe? I can't really put my finger on this.
Yeah, no, me neither. And if, in fact, that is their approach with Villanueva, to try to extract 1 year to build up his trade value, I mean, I think that there's really no precedent to believe that he'll be able to make 32 starts. I mean, what he did over the Blue Jays for the past two seasons, he sort of had to come in out of necessity and fill a spot starter role. And I mean, he performed admirably. But what we saw both seasons is that towards the end of the year, he would start to break down. And you look at his numbers from his September starts from last year, he made five starts and he had an ERA over eight. I mean, this guy, there's really no reason to believe that he has the durability to withstand 32 starts in a year. I mean, he made 16 last year for the Blue Jays, and I'm sure they were very appreciative considering the bevy of injuries that they had to endure. But, I mean, towards the end, you just see that he doesn't have anything left in the tank. And it was pretty much the same case in 2011 where, you know, he was making it sort of with each successive month, his numbers started to go down after, I think it was like June, where you just saw the ERA would start to climb. Yeah, I mean, he was, when he came out of the bullpen in May and joined the starting rotation, he was quite effective. But you see the ERA climb progressively, as well as the WHIP, each month. So this is a guy who strikes me as a viable swing starter kind of guy. But to invest you know, as much money as they did in him to serve as a full-time starter for two seasons just doesn't seem like a sound approach.
Mm-hmm. And now I also wonder if the plan is to start him. I guess you could argue that there's some flexibility with the rotation and that they could turn around and move Matt Garza, and then there's still kind of this meh team, but now they have Edwin Jackson and Carlos Villanueva, so it's okay, and fans will still come and watch them play. But, you know, Scott Baker is the guy who they have, and he's going to come back from Tommy John surgery, they expect, in 2013. And he might force them to make a move in the rotation, which could either be a Matt Garza trade or Carlos Villanueva being relegated to the bullpen, which would make some sense, I guess, if you're going to give a reliever a multi-year contract, 2 years and $10 million doesn't seem that bad. But they're kind of, to me, it just seems like they're giving themselves options for the future because there's just money there to be spent.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad approach. And you mentioned Garza and his trade viability, and I think that that's probably the one they'll explore the most aggressively, just because, I mean, you look at the state of their rotation, and it's probably only Jackson and, I suppose, Samardzija among the starters that they have right now who are going to factor, you know, be a factor in 3 or 4 seasons from now. I mean, Garza's already 29 years old, and, you know, his value is already starting to wane with the injury he had last year. And you look at Feldman and Villanueva and Baker, and they're really just sort of immediate solution stopgaps. So I imagine that once Baker returns, and if he proves that he can actually be a serviceable major league starter again, that they'll probably explore that Matt Garza trade route pretty aggressively, because, you know, there is considerable value there. And I mean, back in 2011, when he was healthy and made 31 starts, he was almost a 5 wins above replacement player. And, you know, he's had an ERA south of 4 every year since 2008. So I think that they could extract quite a bit from Matt Garza. And I imagine that, you know, if he has a good first half of the season, they'll probably do that pretty aggressively at the trade deadline.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've pretty much summed that up. And so we can move on to the next move. We can do either the trade that was made between the Mariners and the Angels or the Rangers' new catcher. I'll leave it up to you.
Well, just because I enjoy saying Vargas, quoting the Bizarro World episode of Seinfeld, let's start with the Vargas for Kendry Morales trade. Your initial impressions of that deal, which of course saw the Angels send designated hitter Kendrys Morales to the Mariners for Vargas.
I like it for the Angels. I think they were dealing from a position of depth, and they added a piece that they kind of desperately needed. And so Vargas is a guy who's kind of been benefiting from Safeco with the Mariners, but I think he can fit well at Angel Stadium. It's also a pretty friendly park for pitchers. Most ground balls are going to get gobbled up, considering that the outfield is now likely to include Peter Bourgeois, Mike Trout, and Josh Hamilton, while Mark Trumbo will go to the DH role. And I kind of like that aspect of it, too, because the Angels will now be able to mix and match a lot more often. So if they want to give a half rest to one of their outfielders, they can say they want to give Trout a half day off, they can DH him, and they can move Peter Bourgeois into center, Hamilton and Trumbo in left or right, whichever they choose to do there. And then they can also use Trumbo to kind of fill the to fill first base every so often. They can use him to fill third base every so often. It's not particularly pretty there, but it's so it kind of makes Trumbo this ultra utility player who can also give rest to everybody else in the lineup, and maybe that makes, you know, maybe that makes everybody just a little bit better over the course of 162 games. And so it's kind of a huge bonus to probably have in the lineup, in addition to adding a guy who's probably going to pitch pretty well in Anaheim.
Yeah, I imagine he will. And I mean, if you look at the home road splits for Jason Vargas over his career, they're not so encouraging. But I mean, like you said, you know, Anaheim Stadium is another one that does tend to give an advantage to the pitchers. And I mean, Vargas being a fly ball pitcher, he has a particularly speedy outfield playing behind him with, you know, Trout and Bourgeois, you know, and even Hamilton in a corner outfield position, I imagine will cover a considerable amount of ground. So yeah, I like this a lot. For the Angels, and now, you know, they won't have to resort to someone like Jerome Williams or even Gasp, you know, like Brad Mills or someone like that to come in and fill the fifth rotation spot. So, you know, I like it a lot. And I mean, for the Mariners, you know, the Mariners sort of, they need bats. Kendry Morales, you know, he'll slot in pretty nicely. I imagine he'll hit a cleanup or fifth in their lineup. Either behind Seager or maybe even Montero, depending on how they want to configure that lineup. But, I mean, you look at the Mariners, and they really needed somebody to come in and help bolster their offense a little bit. I still think that they're a considerable ways away. But, you know, for the most part, I think that the Angels are probably going to extract more value out of this deal. But, I mean, for you know, I consider it a mutually beneficial exchange.
Yeah, I think that the Mariners are actually going to... The Mariners are dealing from a place of depth also, so they don't really need pitching as much as the Angels did. And so this makes sense for them. They can kind of mix and match with their top prospects, who are all either in AA or AAA, or most of their top pitching prospects. You look at guys like Holtzman and Walker and Paxton, they could very easily step into the rotation in 2013 or beyond. So it's kind of, I like it there. And then it kind of, to me, it indicates a lack of confidence in their current first base DH options. When you look at guys like Justin Smoak or Jesus Montero or John Jaso, there's kind of, there was a logjam already. And they went out and got another piece for it, which kind of, to me, indicates that they wanted to upgrade there. And so I think Justin Smoak's days may be numbered. He may be kind of, I don't know what else you do with him. If you're playing Morales consistently, I imagine that Morales is either Morales must be DHing or playing first. He's not doing anything else. So then you have either Smoke or Montero probably DHing or playing first base, whichever Morales isn't doing. And then there's just the catcher spot left, and that goes to Jaso or Montero. So it kind of makes it even more of a logjam and indicates to me that there's either another move on the way or that they've just one of those players probably has lost favor. And my guess would be that it's Smoke, who's been there for a couple of years now, and not Montero, who was just a rookie this year. So I will go back to you on that.
No, I completely agree with you. Smoke is definitely the one that I would consider to be the odd man out, especially when you consider how well John Jaso performed offensively last year. I mean, he played in 108 games, and he had a weighted on-base average of .372, which I remember a few months ago, someone on Twitter, I think it was Dustin Parks of The Scores Getting Blanked, who actually compared him to other catchers from last season, and he had like the third best weighted on base average, which is pretty remarkable. So I imagine they'll want to keep Jaso in the lineup on an everyday basis. I mean, he did that, you know, playing for the Mariners, playing in Safeco Field half of his games. So that's extremely impressive, and Smoke has done absolutely nothing to inspire confidence or really to earn an everyday spot. I mean, for the last three seasons, he's pretty much been playing on an everyday basis, and he's been worth a combined 0 wins above replacement. So there's really no reason to believe that Justin Smoke is going to break out this season. You see what Smoke does. He strikes out, you know, 1 out of every 5 plate appearances, and he really struggles to get on base for his career. He's a .306 OBP guy. So, yeah, I imagine it's going to be Smoke who is going to ride the pine, and Morales will probably DH to play first, and Montero will do the opposite, and Jaso will catch. So I'm totally on board with you there.
Yeah. And then there's one last move we can break down before we take a break. By the way, we never announced who's going to be on the show. So do we want to do that, or do we want to get through Pierzynski first?
No, I think that we owe it to him to tell our listeners who's going to be on the show.
We are going to have the second Jonah.
That's your cue to tell them who's going to be on the show.
We have so much chemistry. It's amazing.
Oh, was that my turn to talk?
We're going to have Jonah Carey on the show of Grantland, author of The Extra 2%, author of a Montreal Expos book that should be out in, I believe, 2014. We'll talk to him all about that. But Jonah Carey is going to be on the show in a little bit. It looks like it's just going to be me talking to Jonah, as is kind of typical of this podcast. But we won't have two Jonas at the same time because we're kind of worried about the universe exploding.
It's a Jonah surplus, and that doesn't work for anybody.
Yeah.
And I fear that we risk alienating our listeners if we, you know, if there's too much Jonah. So Hudson is going to fly solo, so to speak, for this interview, and I have total confidence that he'll do a fantastic job in my absence.
Yeah. Insert baseball pun here. Okay, so then we have one more thing we want to talk about before we take a break and come back with other Jonah. AJ Pierzynski is a $7.5 million richer human being, Jonah, and he's going to be a Texas Ranger.
I really like this deal. When you consider that he's making only $500,000 more than a guy like Francisco Liriano, it's pretty much criminal, but I mean, coming off a sensational year, AJ Pierzynski deserved every dollar, and good for the Rangers for, you know, managing to ink up to only a 1-year deal, because I mean, he's coming off a 3.4 wins above replacement season, and you'd imagine that he might have been able to extract more out of that on the open market. But you know, I really like this for the Rangers, and I mean, he helps provide at least compensate for some of the offensive loss with Josh Hamilton, a fraction of it, because obviously you can't replace a Josh Hamilton. But, you know, now the Rangers have more options, more depth in their lineup. You know, they could hit Beltre 3rd, Cruz 4, Pierzynski 5. You know, depending on how Ole performs, perhaps he could manage his way into the 3-4, into the 3-4-5 zone. But, you know, it gives them more depth, and I think that it'll help cushion the blow a little bit. You know, defensively, Pierzynski isn't the best, but I mean, I think that they signed more for his stick than for his defense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I totally agree with everything you just said. He adds flexibility. He's only a one-year deal. You can't really go too wrong with a one-year deal. And, you know, he makes them better in 2013 than they otherwise would have been. So I like it a lot. If it doesn't work, you're not really screwed, as some other people with the deals they've made might be. So I think that it's a worthwhile investment on the Rangers' part, and it makes the AL West that much more interesting in 2013.
Yeah, and I mean, using pretty much every catching metric, Pierzynski is well below average, but I mean, I think that one of the reasons that they brought him in was, you know, his ability to handle a pitching staff. And I mean, there are some young guys, and, you know, Ogando's relatively young, and Martin Perez. So, I mean, there's a leadership aspect there, an intangible, that I think that they see value in. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, there has to be. Pierzynski, as long as I can remember, has always been a guy that everybody on his team loves him, but everybody who's not on his team hates him. So I guess that's good for team chemistry. It's a thing that we haven't yet been able to quantify, but it's still a thing that probably has value. So I think it's something that is just an added boost to what he's probably going to be able to do with the stick anyway. So it's just it just makes perfect sense for me. I think it's a great add.
Yeah. I totally agree. And on that note, I think that we can head into the break. And when we come back, Mr. Hudson Belinsky is going to go one-on-one with Grantland's Jonah Carey. So stick around. You won't want to miss that.
And welcome back to the Tools of Ignorance podcast. Now joining us, Jonah Carey. Jonah, the author of The Extra 2% and the lead writer at Grantland.com. Jonah, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. It's getting to be that holiday season, so that time of year. But we wanted to ask you a few questions. The first thing we're going to lead off with is probably one of the bigger stories of the offseason in baseball so far. The trade of R.A. Dickey to the Toronto Blue Jays, and let's just get your initial impressions of the deal so far.
Well, I mean, I like it for both teams. If you look at the Mets for a minute, you know, they're just in a position where they probably were not necessarily going to win in 2013, and if they have one threat that's actually pitching, if you look at some of the young guys that they have, Matt Harvey, they've got him, Zach Wheeler is not far from the major leagues, John Meese is a pretty good number three, number four guy. They do have some depth there, so there was the ability to do that. The talent they're getting back has some potential. Travis Arnaud is considered the number one catching prospect in baseball. I do think he has some flaws in his game, but has potential. And Noah Syndergaard, a big right-handed pitcher, he's got a chance. He's obviously a long way from the major league. So I think that was a fine trade for them. Mm-hmm. As for the Jays, you know, the way that I look at it is to say this. I think that people have talked about Dickey and his good pitcher and this that for a while. My focus is on the win curve. The win curve is basically, you know, all things being equal, if you could take an objective look at your team, how many wins do you think they're going to have in the coming season? And there's a lot of kind of irrational exuberance going around in Toronto. Oh, my God, we haven't done anything in 20 years. Look what's going on. Oh, this is exciting. And we're going to win 700 games. Well, I didn't see the team as quite that dominant before this trade. I thought that they were kind of an 85 to 88 win team. You know, good talent. They certainly made some upgrades, but still some flaws. By adding Dickey, you could safely project them as a 90 or better win team. And I think that's a big, big difference. If you look at making the playoffs versus not, getting from the mid to high 80s into the low 90s, that's huge. And obviously, if they have a couple of things go right for them, they could be even better than that. But I just think that inflection point, getting a guy who, it's not a one-year wonder. It wasn't just 2012. He was very good in 2010 and 2011. He's very durable, obviously. He throws a pitch that nobody's ever seen before, that low 80s knuckleball. That's really never been done before. I like everything about this deal for the Jays. I think they're taking a big risk. that's not true. I don't like everything about this deal. There is one thing I don't like, and that's basically saying that JPR and CB is going to be our catcher of the future. He's not good. He has a .275 lifetime on-base percentage, .222 lifetime batting average. He led the league in pass balls last year. He has he gave up 87 stolen bases and 91 starts last year. I mean, he's just not a good defensive catcher at all, and really not a very good offensive catcher despite having power. So they're going to lose something by not getting Darnell into the lineup and keeping Aaron Sepia. But aside from that, the pitching was so bad last year. Dickey's excellent. This was the right time to make the move, so I like it for them.
So on the Mets side of it, obviously it's a little bit more involved than just trading a really good pitcher. R.A. Dickey is kind of this odd example of a pitcher. We've never really seen anything like it. And so do you think with the Mets it's sort of somewhat fear that he won't be able to sustain his success and that they're just cashing in on him really high?
No, I don't agree with that, actually.
No?
If you look at knuckleballers, this is totally normal to be pitching this well at 38 years old. It's weird. I mean, yeah, I agree there is some uncertainty. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they thought he was going to fall off a cliff in 2013. I think it was just looked at and said, this is a chance to get some great prospects. I mean, if you really want to get into other motives, I would submit to you that I think Mets ownership and management felt a little put off by Dickey because he's gone out and he's been critical of the Mets in some respects of where's my contract extension, this, that, and he's a very visible guy. They might not have liked that. I mean, if we want to get into non-baseball reasons. But for the most part, I think it came down to getting good young talent, basically a chance to have 12 years of control over Darnell and Syndergaard for either 1 year or even three if they sign a contract extension with Dickey. That's why you make the move. I don't see anything much more complicated than that.
And then on the Jays side, there are some whispers that that people expect the knuckleball to be much more effective in a dome. And I just wanted to get your take on that. Do you agree with that? Do you know if that's a statistically or scientifically examined and proven thing?
There's not enough data to suggest one way or the other, so I'm going to refrain from commenting on that. I think anybody who states with certainty that it's going to be better or worse is talking out of their ass, quite frankly.
Yeah. Okay. So now moving on a little bit, you're the author of The Extra 2%, a New York Times bestseller, an awesome book. And, you know, up next for you, you've got this Expos project. And so that's slated for release tentatively in the spring of 2014. Can you tell us a little bit about how that project's coming along?
It's going great. I've been doing lots of interviews and just focusing on the reporting part. I've done a little bit of writing, but not a ton. It's been mostly just collecting interviews. But the next few months will be really focused on writing and getting chapters together and getting this thing done. I think I'm over 100 interviews now. I've talked to just, you know, a ton of players, Tim Raines, Rusty Staub, Tim Wallach, Cliff Floyd, Rondell White, Steve Rogers, Dennis Martinez, just on and on. Even utility-type guys like the FP Santangelos of the world have some fascinating things to say. And then also most of the general managers, most of the managers, the owners of the team, fans, I mean, just anything you could possibly think of. It's going to be a pretty substantial book and a pretty diverse book. It's not going to be Chapter 1, 1969 to 1971, Chapter 2, this. It's going to be more... If you've ever read like an old Bill James abstract, it's going to look a little bit more like that. Not in the sense that it's going to be statsy. There's going to be a few stats, but it's not that statsy. More that you have, here's a longer section about this. Then I'm going to talk to you for two paragraphs about that. Then there's going to be this weird sidebar about this that you never considered, but it's actually really interesting. And it's going to have all that. So it's going to talk about, obviously, the baseball, the on-the-field stuff. It's going to talk about the politics of the region, the economics of it. I mean, funny random stories from players that you would never expect to see in print, whatever. There's just all kinds of stuff. So I think that no matter what kind of fan you are, even if you don't really care that much about the Expos, I think you'll find it to be an entertaining read.
And so the title, is it, I believe it was tentative. I'm not sure if you guys are definitely.
We don't have a title. There is no title.
Okay. So do you have any fun ideas yet, or what's going on with that?
Well, it comes down to the publisher, usually. The last book that I wrote, The Extra 2%, that was entirely named by the publisher, and I suspect it'll be by them, too. I just don't have any great insight into what sells books or what markets well or whatever. They know that. They study that. My job is just to write the book, I suspect. It'll probably be their idea this time, too. I would bet that it has nothing to do with Expos. It doesn't say Expos in the title, but a play on words with Expos. I don't think it'll be anything like that. The same way that a book that I wrote, which was Well, I mean, it was a broader book. It wasn't only about the Tampa Bay Rays, but it was largely about the Tampa Bay Rays. Did not mention the Tampa Bay Rays in the title at all. So mm-hmm. I have a feeling it'll be something like that, something, you know, quirky and evocative that doesn't necessarily focus on one narrow field. I guess the whole idea with selling books is you don't want to restrict it just to fans of that team. If I only had Tampa Bay Rays fans or I only had Montreal Expos fans, then I'm shutting off a whole big, huge part of the population. You don't necessarily want to do that.
And so, obviously, you're far away from this still, but after this Expos book, what do you think is in store for you? What would you like to work on next?
Not a book. I didn't want to do this book. I got talked into it by my editor, who's a big Expos fan, and went to McGill. But unless somebody backs a Brinks truck full of money up to my house, I'm not writing another book for any time in the foreseeable future. I have a day job at Grambling, which I love, and I didn't have this. I didn't have this job actually when I signed the Expos contract or obviously when I was doing the Rays book. And now that I do, I've come to realize, holy crap, this is a lot to balance at one time. Plus I have young children and all that. So yeah, no, I'm just going to focus on my day job at Grambling, which I really like. I write baseball over there and, it's terrific. I mean, like I said, if it's, some huge amount of money, maybe, but I mean, there's no better, as far as just topics, there's never going to be a better topic than writing about the team of my youth. And I get to talk about, you know, some of the stuff is going to be biographical. I get to talk about me and my buddies going to games and here's what happened. I'm getting paid money for that. I understand how fortunate I am to be able to do that. And it's great, but it's a huge amount of work. It's about 3 years to write a book, realistically, between all the research and all the reporting, all the writing, you know, all the days away from your family and nights away from your family and getting a stiff back and da 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 da. I don't want to. I'm not trying to elicit sympathy. I'm just telling people that it's freaking hard. And like I said, this is a passion project and I'm very excited about it. But I really, really doubt I'm going to write another one after this one anytime soon.
And you are the father of twins. So just one anecdote from them recently that was just either touching or just kind of funny. Anything you got there?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm sure they're loaded. I mean,
yeah, it's not any one thing. When you have three-year-old twins, it's just every day is kind of funny and unusual or whatever. They say things that are preposterous. Sometimes they surprise you with their insights. They're just, you know, they're three, so you don't think anything. And they say something, and you say, wow, that's spot on. You've completely nailed the tenor of this conversation or whatever. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm married to a child psychologist, too, so she has even additional insight on what they have to say and how they react and all that stuff. And, yeah, it's great. I love it.
That's awesome. Well, Jonah, before we let you go, let's give you one last chance to plug your work and plug your Twitter handle.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, the book that's actually for sale is called The Extra 2%. And like I said, it's nominally about the Tampa Bay Rays, but I guess it's sort of like saying that Moneyball is only about the Oakland A's. There are kind of deeper concepts in there. And there's storytelling. There's stuff about the economics of baseball. There's all kinds of stuff like that. And it did come out last year, but I don't find it to be dated at all. That team is still very competitive. Mm-hmm. They still do things differently than anybody else. And there's still lessons to be learned if you're a fan of whatever, the Jays or the Red Sox or the Astros or any other team. So I would recommend people pick that up. And my day job, like I said, is at Grambling.com, which is the spinoff of ESPN started by Bill Simmons. And I write about baseball over there. And that's a fun gig, and I get to do whatever I want. I even get to swear in articles, which is cool and unusual. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jonah Carey, which is JonahKerei. About 90% of it is Simpsons jokes, so if you're into that, cool.
Yeah, okay. So, Jonah, thank you so, so much for joining us. And folks, stick around. We'll have more of the Tools of Ignorance podcast in just a second.
Never tell what you wanted from me, babe. Feel you down deep inside. Out there all alone, most of the time. You sit by the phone, having the time of your life. I'll take you there, I'll take you there. No one ever knows.
Welcome back to the podcast. Another huge, huge thanks to Jonah Carey for joining us on the show. We are actually recording this final segment before we've recorded the Jonah segment. So, yeah, whatever he had to say, it was awesome.
That was the most insightful baseball commentary I have ever heard.
Yeah, it was really... unbelievable. It was, and I don't even indescribable. Say
that. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even saying that facetiously. Like, huge, huge thanks to Jonah Carey for coming on the show. we had a bit of trouble coordinating an interview time, and you know, thank you, big thank you to him for being so gracious throughout the entire process.
Yeah, yeah, I'm excited to actually conducting to conduct that interview. But before we get into our final conversation here, we can just tell you where you can send your emails if you are so inclined. You can do so at toolsofignorance11@gmail.com. I just considered spelling it, but I'm kind of feeling pretty lazy. Jonah, do you feel like spelling it, or how do you feel about it?
I don't feel like spelling it. If you can't spell Tools of Ignorance, then maybe you shouldn't be sending any emails. Is that harsh? I feel like that came off as kind of harsh.
Yeah, but it's our podcast, so... Yeah.
Anywho, as we transition out of the show, Hudson, tell me about your big holiday plans.
I am going to hang out in New Jersey. I'm going to eat a little bit too much food, drink a little too much eggnog, and that's what I'm going to do on Christmas. In the time between Christmas and New Year's, I hope to write something about a prospect named Marcus Stroman. I'm gonna
help him.
Yeah, he's a very interesting guy. He's gonna be a lot of fun in the big leagues. I'm hoping to get in conversations with some player development folks from the Jays, but that may be difficult to make happen given the time of the year. But there's some video we have, so we can go off of that, that we can kind of explain everything to you. I am in the minority on this, but I believe that he would have been just fine as a starter. Having seen him as an amateur, I loved him. I thought he'd be kind of a middle-of-the-rotation cog, and the personality just makes him that much more difficult to not pay a lot of money. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. Sorry to interrupt, but
no,
I mean, it's almost coming into this offseason, you wouldn't have expected that on opening day the Blue Jays' rotation would be better than the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And as it currently stands, with Darren Oliver unsure as to whether or not he'll come back, that's a very realistic possibility. And I think because of that, you know, the likelihood of them keeping Stroman a reliever increases dramatically. But we won't get into that now. I'm sure that you will cover every such angle in your piece, which I very much look forward to reading. And as for my holiday plans, Hudson.
Yes, what's up, Jonah?
I have no plans. I'm on the non-plan plan, and I'm very much looking forward to it. Hopefully write about some baseball and disseminate that via Twitter and into your eye holes. And outside of that, just relax. I don't know how much eggnog I'll consume just because... Okay, what is eggnog? Can you clarify this for me?
It's kind of this goopy mess. It's milk. It's eggs. It's nog. It's,
you're a nog.
You can have a glass of it, really, and that's all you should have, because it's kind of disgusting.
But there's booze in it, right?
You can. Most people will be inclined to put something in there.
Will you be inclined?
I'm not sure. It'll probably be a family gathering.
Oh, so you'll definitely be inclined.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to want to get that over with a little bit easier. So a little bit of liquid courage in the eggnog never hurt anyone, except for all the people that it hurt. So eggnog is kind of, I wouldn't drink it any other time of the year, just because it's kind of the seasonal tradition thing, but, and also, if you have more than one glass of it, you're basically asking to get sick, so, you have to be careful with eggnog.
It should be a controlled substance. I mean, essentially it is, because it's, you know, it's sort of confined to the holiday season.
Yeah.
So people recognize that it has the capacity for evil if you consume it in you know, quantities that are too big. So yeah, that's our assessment of eggnog.
So So, Jonah, we've talked about the holidays, but and what we're expecting from our holidays, but I can't even talk anymore. I would just like to express my cheeriest and happiest of wishes to everyone who's taking the time out of their holiday season to listen to our show. And yeah, I hope everyone has a safe and enjoyable holiday season. I would guess we're probably not going to do a show before the new year, but if we do, should we just do a random show that has nothing to do with baseball, just so people have something to listen to when they're on their trip from point A to point B during sure. holiday season? Yeah, we'll do another show in between Christmas and J1. I just said J1. That was stupid.
Don't do that again.
That was stupid. I'm sorry.
That should be your New Year's resolution, to never say that again.
I could say J2, though, because J2 is the signing deadline.
No, you can't.
No? Can't say it? Okay. It's no longer in my lexicon, then. What are we doing here?
I have absolutely no idea.
So on that note, I think we can put everyone to tears and say goodbye, Jonah.
Yes, we'll bid them a fond farewell, and again, just to echo my co-host sentiment, a very happy holidays to all of you. Enjoy it. Be safe. Try to endure the family gatherings as best you can. And, if, a baseball-related or not baseball-related question should pop into your mind whilst you're consuming the eggnog, send it over to toolsofignorance11@gmail.com. Once again, happy holidays, and we'll see you on the other side. Cheers.
Adios.